Straight Talk on WRHI-FM 100.1 and CN2 is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, for another edition of our Straight Talk program presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments at Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. You can find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. And our thanks to Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care. You can find out more about them online at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. Always pleased to have with us a lady who dazzles you with all her knowledge, Dr. Laura Ulrich. And I call her Dr. Laura Ulrich because she came out of the hallowed halls of Winthrop University until she was discovered by the Federal Reserve Bank. And they said, you know what? We need you up here. Is that the way it worked?
Exactly.
The president sent you an engraved invitation.
Yes, exactly.
Said, get up here. We need you now.
I had to go.
So how long have you been up there now?
I've been with the Richmond Fed now for about 5.5 years. Time flies.
Phew.
Yeah.
So they call it the Federal Reserve of Richmond.
Yeah,
and yet Richmond. We're right here in Charlotte, North Carolina. How's that work?
So there are 12 Federal Reserve banks across the country, one of which is in Richmond. Richmond Fed serves what we call the 5th District, which is the Carolinas, Virginia, Maryland, West Virginia, and D.C. And so even though we have an office in Charlotte and Baltimore, it's the Richmond Fed.
Okay. And there are how many people up there?
You know, in our Charlotte office, we have a really large cash operation. There's, I think, 38, if I remember correctly, cash operations across the country where we count cash, sort it, replace, shred, all the things that needs to be done with cash. And Charlotte has a really large cash operation. So we have a big cash office. And that actually runs at night, too, the cash counting and sorting. And then we also have a really large group of folks that regulate banks. It's Truist and Bank of America are based in Charlotte. We have large regulation teams there. So our research team is smaller. There are less than 10 of us that are in research in Charlotte. But we've actually been growing, so that's good.
So when you say research, you do what kinds of stuff?
So my job actually officially changed about a week and a half ago.
Oh,
but
boy.
I have been the economist for North and South Carolina for the past 5.5 years. So my title is Senior Regional Economist, but my job has recently transitioned to where now I'm spending my time. I'm doing full-time work on kind of community and technical college research and then kind of like workforce labor participation research.
It's way above my pay grade.
Yeah, I love it, though. I love it. So I'm doing that now across our whole district, all 5 states in D.C.
So how would you say our economy is here locally?
Yeah, you know, I mean, the economy's doing well nationally. I mean, if you look from a macro perspective nationally, especially considering the cumulative inflation we've had over the past few years, employment's remained strong. Unemployment rate has ticked up a little bit, but it's still, you know, right around 4.1%, which is really low historically. People are spending money. So
money
consumption has been strong. Yeah, consumption's been strong. So the economy's done well. South Carolina, the economy has done exceptionally well over the past few years. You know, last year, 2023, South Carolina was the fastest growing state in the nation, which is just unreal.
Isn't that something?
Yes. I mean,
wow.
Who would have thought, right?
Jeez.
But it is important to acknowledge that even in North Carolina and South Carolina, they've grown rapidly. About half the counties in the states are shrinking. So the more rural parts of the state haven't fared as well as places like Rock Hill, right, or Greenville or Charleston. But it's really been incredible, the growth we've seen here in the past few years.
So from the hallowed halls of Winthrop University, where you hung out for 13 years?
About 13 years, yeah.
You've transitioned into working for the Fed.
Mm-hmm.
And you do what kinds of work? I mean...
Yeah, so it's been really interesting, Manning, because of the past few years, I've really shifted what I've done from being more Well, I've always been interested in workforce and like how people transition from education to work. I've long did a bunch of research in education, but I spent most of my time doing research on K through 12 education. But when I got to the Fed 5 years ago, they put me on a project right away that had to do with rural versus urban community colleges. South Carolina, we call them technical colleges. And so I got more interested in the role that these institutions play in the country in terms of training people for the workforce. And now that's a big part of how I spend my day is researching that. And I do a lot of public speaking on that topic, on community colleges, on workforce, on what does the future of work look like. I mean, we've known there's this big demographic cliff coming, right? Baby boomers retiring. Moving from a giant generation of workers to a giant generation of retirees. We're now living that. I mean, that's happening now. And so what does that mean for the future? What does it mean for workforce? How do we get more people working? How do we encourage people to work more hours? All these things. So these are the things that take up most of my time now. But I absolutely love it.
Have you come up with any solutions yet?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I do think we've had some cultural shifts in the United States that have impacted some of this. I mean, the baby boomers are a very hardworking generation. They were also the first generation where it was common to have two working people in a household, so they have a lot of money. So the average baby boomer has over $1 million at retirement, which is a lot more than previous generations. So they're able to retire and retire well. So it's kind of not likely many of them will remain in the labor force for, you know, much longer. And unfortunately, there are some patterns, especially amongst males and especially amongst white males without college degrees, where they're working fewer hours than their parents did, and their labor force participation rates are lower. I think there's some things that can be done in that space. We've had some shifts where, I mean, sometimes I call it extended adolescence. This is like my nice term for this concept of kind of failure to launch. Like people are living with their parents longer, they're being supported by, you know, their parents supporting adult children for longer periods of time. I think there's some shifts that can happen in that space that could encourage workforce participation.
We could spend the whole hour talking about this. Very interesting.
But it's a really interesting area of research, and it's becoming more important because with these demographic shifts, we just need people. If we want to consume like we consume as Americans, we like to consume stuff, right? We've got to have people working.
And we don't have we don't have our population growing at the rate that it did.
Right, correct. That's
40,
exactly
50 years
right.
Ago.
That's right. Population growth rate's really low. We have to figure out, how to increase participation. So we talk about these like non-skill barriers. I mean, there's reasons. It's easy to like label people that don't work or people that don't work as much as we might like them to as lazy, but that's not really what's happening in most cases. Typically, it's people aren't working because they can't afford childcare, or they don't have transportation, or they have a criminal record and can't find employment. Like there's a barrier, and so we call these non-skill barriers. So the question is, what do we do to improve the labor force situation to where people can overcome these non-skill barriers and enter the labor force?
Whew. Wow. You get out of my wheelhouse real quick.
Yeah.
That's good. So here we are, 2024.
Yep.
I guess it depends upon who you listen to politically as to how we're doing, how we're not. We're blessed to live here in the Southeast, which seems to be doing relatively well. Other parts of the country aren't doing so well, but, you know, that's pretty much par for the course, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Is it not?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We always have this this dynamic going on. So when you look at this right now, are we clicking along pretty well?
Yeah.
And not a lot of trouble spots to think about?
Not a lot of trouble spots. I mean, I think in general, I would say we're seeing a broadening of kind of like the deceleration. Like the economy is doing well, but things are slowing down a little bit. But that's a positive thing from a inflation standpoint. You know, if the economy is burning hot, that's inflationary, and we're trying to get inflation under control. So for people that want the interest rates to come down, we needed to see this broadening of a deceleration, so that I see as positive. But yeah, the economy, I mean, you know, if you had told me prior to this whole episode, you know, prior to 2020, that we would have the type of inflation we've had, which is over 20% cumulative inflation, and that real consumption. So the amount of stuff, not the price of stuff, but the amount of stuff that people are purchasing would go up. That would have blown my mind. I mean, I wouldn't have thought that was possible, but it's happened. And, you know, I think there's a range of reasons why it's happened, but it's amazing how resilient the economy has been given
people spending beyond their means.
Somewhat, but honestly, I mean, we talked to a lot of bankers. We talked to a lot of other lenders, you know, auto lenders and things like that. Consumer credit has remained strong. I mean, if you look at net worths of individuals, they're up across all income groups compared to 2019. Asset values are up. Wages have grown a lot. In at the bottom end of the income distribution, wages have grown faster than inflation. And so even though, as you said, it depends kind of who you're listening to, where you get your information, who you're talking to in terms of how people feel about the economy, from a macro perspective, the economy has done really well.
So you don't see trends where we are spending beyond our means?
I mean, certainly you see long-term trends on that perspective, and like national debt, like the government spending beyond their means. And credit card debt is up. But if you normalize credit card debt for incomes, it's about where it was before the pandemic. So it's not anywhere close to where it was like pre-Great Recession.
Okay.
So is it up? Yes. Is it up to a level that concerns me? No. All this being said, for families that live paycheck to paycheck, inflation is a horrendous tax on their own earnings, right? You go to the grocery store, prices are way up. Mm-hmm. It's a tax, right? It's like paying a tax. And so, you know, there are households that have really struggled through the inflationary period. But from a broader macro perspective, things have looked really strong.
So in our particular region, mm-hmm. are we doing better than the other regions of the country?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, in our district, so like I said, we cover the Carolinas, Virginia, Maryland, West Virginia, and D.C., and the Carolinas have led the way in terms of economic growth in any way you cut it. Over the past few years, and actually this morning was looking at some data, and over the past 4 years, you know, sales tax revenue in South Carolina is up over 46%, which is unbelievable. I mean, inflation over that same period of time is up about 20%. So that just shows you know, sales tax revenue. Obviously, those of us that live in South Carolina are paying sales tax revenue, so some of that is from population growth. And South Carolina was the fastest growing state in the country last year. So some of that is like in migration. But then some of that too, you know, sales tax revenue also when people come vacation at Myrtle Beach or whatever, they're paying sales tax revenue, right? So it's also about increased tourism and visits to the state. So, yeah, the growth in South Carolina is unreal. And, you know, the Carolinas did not do as well during the Great Recession. It was a tough time. As a matter of fact, I remember I was new to Winthrop at the time, and I remember teaching my students South Carolina had the second highest unemployment rate during the Great Recession. It was Rhode Island and then South Carolina. I don't
really
remember why Rhode Island was first, but in typical recessionary periods, states like South Carolina, North Carolina have gotten hit harder because we were manufacturing heavy, and those industries typically lose jobs pretty quickly in recessions and things like that. But the pandemic and the COVID recession was different, and the Carolinas have done very, very well.
Have we just been lucky to do so well, or is it because we have good policymakers?
You know, I don't think it's really driven by either one of those things as much as geography, honestly. I mean, I think a lot of times us economists want to believe that like all these policy things really make a difference. You know, people move because of tax policy, people move because of blah, blah, blah. And then you do a fancy regression analysis and realize that people want to come because of the weather, right? Like, so part of it is geography. Part of it is this, we're close to the beach, we're close to the mountains. But a big part of it too this time is about logistics and transportation, in my opinion. One of the big lessons from COVID was that you can be in a situation where all of a sudden it's very hard to get goods from point A to point B, especially if point A is China and point B is America. And so the idea of being located where you can easily get goods up and down the East Coast, out to the West Coast. It's just we're in a really good spot. And it's, you know, if you look at the Gallo facility down in Chester, you know, we talked to them, and the reason they located there was they could get rail direct from the port to Chester County. And that rail car, I've been there when it arrives. It comes into the building. They're offloading, producing, loading back, and going right up the East Coast, right? It's just very easy to get things where you need them to be.
And we, we're not a tax-heavy state compared to some.
No, we're not. We're not. Well, it depends on what you're looking at, though. Like, we don't especially have business-friendly taxation because we're property tax-heavy for businesses. But, yeah, we're not. But if you look at, like, North Carolina and South Carolina, they have some different policies. And they had different administrations, like through COVID, one had Democratic governor, one had Republican governor. So they chose kind of different policies in terms of how fast they reopened and things like that. And they've kind of grown right along beside each other. So that's why I think some of it is about that. But the bigger things are these like kind of location factors that make the Carolinas really well suited for growth. The other thing that's huge is that we don't have any massive urban areas in the Carolinas. And if you look at the places that have done the worst post-COVID, they are the big metro areas because, A, it became very, you know, it became very difficult to get to the, you know, during COVID, like metros are shut down and things. You couldn't get around these urban areas and people left, right? People left and didn't want to come back to work in these large metro areas. You still have a lot of remote work and hybrid work occurring in those places. And so the places that have shrunk the fastest are oftentimes the largest metro areas. And we don't have those in the Carolinas.
Even though we are sitting here right next to Charlotte.
Right. It's not, Charlotte, you know, is we think of it as being really big, but compared to Chicago or LA or New York, right? It's not. And so these mid-sized metros like Charlotte and Raleigh, Greenville, Charleston, they've just become extremely attractive to companies and people.
So we need to learn from the lessons that others have done before us.
I mean, especially on things like transportation. I think if you look at why people didn't want to go and why now people don't want to go into those big cities for work, a lot of it has to do with transportation infrastructure. And it's a lesson that Charlotte needs to pay attention to. I grew up not that far from Atlanta and saw kind of that transformation over time, and we don't want to become Atlanta.
Well, you can see it now. I mean, Charlotte, I mean, what used to take, 30 minutes to get up there?
That's ridiculous.
It's an hour.
Yeah. I mean,
no question.
My office is right in uptown, so I know
well. We're going to have to take our mid-program break. Remind you that you are listening to Straight Talk live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax here with Founders. And by Anderson Griggs Investments of Uptown Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. You can find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. Our thanks as well to Good Pharmacy, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. Okay, we hang out here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. The good doctor over here knows exactly what we're about to do. We do fresh tubs and salads. We do them 6 days a week because I can't get the guy to work a seventh day. Too lazy. The way we do it is in the white letters, and we're all going to say it together. Are you ready? One, two, three.
Slice.
Garden. Back after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI and CN2.
There are lots of reasons why people like dining at Substation 2.
A good deal for a delicious sandwich.
Quality of the food. I get what I want. It tastes great every time.
Hit the spot, definitely. It's amazing.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
There are very few genuine money managers in America, and one just happens to be your neighbor. If you have $100,000 or more, call the professionals at Anderson Griggs Investments and see what a money manager can do for you. Anderson Griggs, 324-5044, or go online to AndersonGriggs.com.
When it comes to matters of the heart, you want someone who understands you. And that's our mission at Piedmont's Heart and Vascular Center. We are the only cardiovascular hospital in York County providing comprehensive care from diagnosis to recovery. Our team includes experienced cardiologists, cardiovascular surgeons, and nurses, all dedicated to keeping your heart healthy. Cardiac care with advanced technology close to home. That's Piedmont Medical Center. Learn more online at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com.
When disaster strikes, one of the most important things is getting life back to normal. A little compassion can go a long way. Paul Davis is here for you. Paul Davis is committed to handling any property damage with exceptional care, because what we do is about more than property. It's about people. We have the training and expertise necessary to completely restore your property fast. For all your cleanup and restoration needs, call the experts at Paul Davis Restoration at 329-1140 or find us online at pauldavisrockhill.com.
Relax this summer with a promotional rate on select travel purchases with your Founders Federal Credit Union credit card. Now through August 31st, get 6.99% APR for 6 months on qualifying purchases, including airfare, hotels, restaurants, and cruise lines. Don't let interest rates slow you down this summer. Visit foundersfcu.com/travel to learn more. On March 1st, 2025, the promotional APR reverts to the effective APRs previously disclosed. Call 800-845-1614 for details about credit costs and terms. Membership qualification required.
Have you ever wondered why so many people enjoy dining at Substation 2?
I love their fresh meats and the sweet wheat bread.
The bread, their quality meats, and their prices.
It's just always a great, consistent meal.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk on WRHI-FM 100.1 and CN2 is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2. Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Dr. Laura Ulrich is with us today. She's a regional economist with the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond, and she has a plethora of information. I can sit here and talk to her all afternoon. Interest rates. My gosh.
Yeah,
they're all over the place. I mean, can't figure out what they're going to do, what they're not. But the Federal Reserve has indicated that, and I know this is a tough call for them because they try to keep this thing in check. But apparently the economy has softened enough where they're going to be doing some reductions. True?
Yeah, so last week was the annual conference at Jackson Hole.
Nice place to go.
Sorry for
it's always so tough.
Fed execs that have to go to Jackson.
Where your taxpayer dollars are going.
So they met at Jackson Hole last week, and Jerome Powell gave a press conference. He was really explicit in what he said afterwards, which was, I believe his exact quote is like, it's now time for policy to adjust.
Right.
So I think that's pretty clear that means he believes it's time, and the fact that he believes that is telling, because he's in charge of, you know, he is in charge of the Board of Governors for the Federal Reserve, which is 7 of the 12 voting spots on the what's called the FOMC that votes on interest rates. But so I think, you know, most people are expecting that they'll cut interest rates at the next meeting. So then the question becomes, by how much?
And how many will they
and
do?
And how many cuts?
Yeah.
Yes. So one thing that's really different about this time is that if you look at previous Fed cut cycles, so the Federal Reserve raises the interest rates and then they start cutting. In every other case, those cuts have occurred basically when a recession has started, because the Fed increasing rates has then contributed to a slowdown in the economy that's called a recession. So this is the concept of like, having a soft landing is like, can the Fed bring inflation down and raise interest rates without causing recession? So far that has happened. We'll see if it ends that way. It's been this like mythical thing, but we'll see if we've actually gotten it right this time. But since we aren't having a recession, the rates will likely come down slower than they have in the past. So it will probably look somewhat like stair steps, but we just don't, I have no idea exactly what that path will look like. I'm extremely interested to see what this is going to be like.
And we measure that how?
So every time the Federal Reserve meets, and in theory, if there was a need for like an emergency meeting, they can do emergency cuts or emergency increases, but it doesn't look like that would be happening. So every time they meet, they can vote to lower interest rates as much or as little as they want to. So they could cut by any amount. Typically, they cut by at least 0.25, like 250 basis points. So 0.25%. So, but they could do more than that. So right now, the federal funds rate is 5.25 to 5.5, that range. So they, in theory, could come in and say, we're going to cut it to 3%. They're unlikely to do that, though, right? They're not going to do some huge cut. Because that could risk inflation bouncing back up. So they're probably going to take it relatively slow, I think, given that the economy is still doing well.
And, boy, oh, boy, when they You know, when they said, what was it? I've forgotten the commercial. When somebody speaks, everybody listens.
Yes.
And when they, when the Federal Reserve makes a move.
Yes.
It drives everything.
Yes.
So.
And there's all sorts of prognosticators that think, I mean, you know, there's, yesterday I had someone ask me in a presentation I was doing, do you think that these Wall Street estimates right about how much they're going to cut? Do you think this is, I said, no, I don't think any of it's right, because right now we don't know exactly what the data are going to look like by the next meeting. The process is very fluid. There's data coming in every day that are being examined by all these Fed presidents and the Board of Governors. And so if the data come in over the next month showing it's the economy softening even more than expected, they're going to cut more, right?
Right, sure.
If it looks like the economy is running hotter than expected, they could decide not to cut at all, right? Like, we don't know.
Right.
It's a very fluid situation. So I tend not to read too much into all these forecasts and guesses.
So you're associated with the Bank of Richmond,
mm-hmm.
which is this region right here.
Uh-huh.
The economy here in the Southeast is just strong.
Mm-hmm.
Fair to say, it's strong.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see any signs of weakness anywhere at all?
So there are places in our district. So Maryland and West Virginia, there's more weakness than here. There are sectors that have been hit really hard. So obviously, if you talk to somebody right now that owns big office buildings anywhere, they've not had a great past couple of years, right?
Yep, that's right.
Even if we hadn't had the pressure on office that we've had, the interest rates would have hit them hard. So there's interest rate sensitive sectors that have had a harder time than others. But in general, if most people we talk to now are still seeing demand that is well above where it was in 2019, they might not, you know, 2024 might not be as strong as 2022 was, but it's still stronger than what they expected kind of pre-COVID. So the economy is doing well. Now, if you ask a lot of people about the economy, they'll tell you it's terrible, right? But it's interesting. We have the Richmond Fed runs along with the Atlanta Fed, and Duke University runs the National CFO Survey. And it's similar with CFOs. If you ask chief financial officers, if you ask CFOs in the survey, and they do ask them, how do you feel about the economy in general? They're very negative about it. But if you say, how's your own company doing? We're doing great. And consumers have been similar. If you ask them, how is the economy doing broadly, they feel really negative about it. But if you say, like, how's your own spending? Are you going to, are you cutting back on your spending? No, I'm good. I'm still spending, I'm fine. So it's a really interesting, consumer sentiment is a really interesting thing.
And people are still hiring. I mean,
there's
plenty of jobs
out there.
Hiring.
And I mean, especially if you have a skilled trade, there's so many opportunities out there for those in the skilled trade. So,
and living here in the Southeast is a good place to be.
Yes, I'm reminded very frequently when I look at the economic data how thankful I am to be the economist for North and South Carolina and not other states.
Well, Doc, we've run out of time, which I thought we would. It's always a pleasure to have you here.
Great to be here.
We'll get you back again, I promise you. And between now and the election, who knows what's going to happen? Who knows what's going to happen? But the system will continue to work no matter who's in office and no matter what the political promises are. The fact of the matter is there's a lot of stability within the system.
Yes.
To keep things from going crazy.
And this is why I'm so glad the Federal Reserve is apolitical and nonpartisan. I can stay out of that.
Good for you. And that's going to wrap up our Straight Talk program presented by Founders Federal Credit Union, Relax You with Founders, and by Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. You can find out more online at andersongriggs.com. Okay, we hang out here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, right across from the greatest institution of higher education anywhere in the Southeast, Winthrop University. We have this wonderful slogan that tells everybody what the heck goes on here and why you should be here for lunch or dinner. At the count of three, let's tell them, Doc. One, two, three.
Slice, slice, slice.
Garden, garden, garden. Dr. Laura Ulrich, thank you very much for being with us. We'll see you on the radio soon.